Today is August 7th, 2015. My name is Christina Barrow McElhaney, interviewing for the Arizona State University Dinner 2040 Project, interviewing Mr. J.D. Hill. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'd just like to talk a little bit about kind of your background and how, where you grew up and about your family.
Okay. I grew up in a suburb of Minneapolis, Minnesota, St. Michael. And I was raised middle-class family, typical suburbia, housing development.
How did you first, do you have early food memories or early memories with gardening or any early memories that kind of brought you to this direction that you've taken?
My parents did a little gardening, like they might plant some flowers, some geraniums, stuff like that. But my dad always cooked, so he made dinner every single night. He was always using fresh ingredients and making a full dinner meal. So I had a little bit exposure to food growing up, but I really kind of found my own path in college.
Okay, so let's talk about eating dinner together and why that was important for your family.
I brought us to the table together every single night so we could talk about, you know, what happened that day. And my parents could, you know, stay in touch with their kids and know, you know, what's going on, what kind of issues they're dealing with, and talk about things that are important.
Do you remember helping your dad cook?
No.
Okay.
He was kind of king of the kitchen. you know, get away. I'm cooking.
Any favorite dishes that he served that you were there?
I always liked his bow tie pasta that he would make.
Hey, we all have our spaghetti was the one someone asked earlier, so it seems to be kind of the Italian dish and everything. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about why in college and why the turnaround. And
in college, I met a student. He was an ex-Army Ranger, older. I think he was like 35 years old. And we became friends. We met in philosophy class, and he really put an impression on me. He exposed me to a lot of new things. I had just moved here. I was 19 years old, freshman, just out of high school, lived with my parents my whole life in a nice suburbia area. So he really exposed me to a lot of new things and things I had never thought of and thing, you know. So he was really into food. He was a physical trainer and very spiritual and in touch with his diet. So kind of inspired me to get more information and knowledge about what's going on in food and think about my food, actually. I was really big into zebra cakes. Growing up, so at school lunch, we had the a la carte line and then the hot lunch line, and I'd always go to the a la carte line, and I'd get a zebra cake, pretzel with cheese, and a Gatorade every single day. And then I would crash hard right after lunch in the next class. So I really didn't have any kind of thoughts or, you know, really didn't think about what food was and the relationship it had with my body until I met him, and he really kind of opened me up to it all.
Or some of the kind of, can you give me some highlights that are things that he shared with you or that kind of changed, turned you to this new direction?
Mm-hmm. He just would talk about the importance of a balanced diet, so getting all your vitamins that you need, getting the protein that you need, getting the carbohydrates that you need, kind of mathematical more about it, like, hey, you know, you need to be eating this much of this, you need to be eating that much of that, because he was really into physical training and, you know, gaining muscle mass and stuff like that. So that's how I first started to get into food, was just, you know, him telling me, you know, you got to be eating this much of this, that much of that, where I had never thought about any of those things.
So did you start to slowly change your diet?
Yeah. So when I started working out with him freshman year, I'd go to the gym with him 5 days a week, and he kind of just trained me for free, just being friends. And then we'd go back to his place, he'd make shakes, he'd make a meal, you know. So I started definitely changing my diet. I was still really heavy into Hungry Howie's and all other kinds of great food around here. But slowly over 5 years at ASU and continuing my friendship with him, it evolved and got, you know, deeper and deeper and more serious about what I was putting into my body.
And how did the was it a gradual change? Was it a quick change? I mean, did you see results too? It was gradual.
I definitely saw results. Much healthier than I was in high school. I looked healthier. I felt healthier. I had more energy. So that was all really good reinforcing things.
So tell me a little bit about the name of your business and kind of its mission and its goals.
The name is Recycled City, LLC, and our mission is to build a circular economy in the local food system. So we want to take food back to food. So 40% of all the food waste, or 40% of all the food that's grown in the country goes to the landfill. And that's a lot of food. And we're destroying our soils to grow that food. So I kind of think of it as we're, you know, kind of extracting soil from the earth and then shipping it to the landfill. And local organic agriculture has become very popular over the last 15 years. And I think it's going to keep growing in popularity. And more people are going to continue to support local and organic food. And if we want that, that depends on the soil. So we can't have a system where we send 40% of all the food waste or 40% of all the food to the landfill or incinerator. That's not going to work out. So I wanted to do something about that and change it. And I went to the School of Sustainability and got a business sustainability degree, along with a finance degree from W.P. Carey School of Business, and I got a certificate in small business entrepreneurship. So that kind of, all those things, all my education in college kind of culminated together, the finance, the sustainability, the entrepreneurship, and I came up with this idea after seeing a lot of other similar startups in other metropolitan cities across the country. To get people to be activists in their local food system. So what we've done so far is we have 250 residential customers that we service on a weekly or a biweekly basis and 30 businesses. The majority of them are restaurants. Some are food trucks, some are corporate cafeterias, some are offices, a couple are schools. And we launched a local food guide just recently on our website. So now anybody can go there, and if they want to be an activist in their local food system and they want the places that are generating the most amount of food waste to start recycling that food waste into a resource, they can go to our local food guide and find out all the restaurants, the locally made vendor producers, coffee shops that are practicing this and are strictly building farmland. So we're not a typical compost company where we're going to collect compost and transform it into compost and then sell it. We are strictly building farmland. So 100% of our collection goes to building farmland because that's the most important thing. It's not too important to build golf courses. You know, highway plantings are nice. I don't know how resilient they're going to make our cities. But farmland is the key to the future. We all eat food. That's what sustains us. Our farmland is going in the opposite direction that it needs to. And there's a resource we could use to really benefit that farmland or even build new farmland in urban settings, vertical gardening, with that resource we're just sending to the landfill. So we take that and, you know, hopefully build farmland in a sustainable local circular food system.
Let's talk a little bit about your business background. How has that been instrumental in helping your business move forward?
I think it's been very important.
I mean, you're coming from almost two different areas, a very corporate mindset and then the sustainability. So mm-hmm. how do you think your business accommodates both?
Well, I'm always thinking about growth, and that's essential for a for-profit business. You want to grow kind of almost by any means possible. So I'm always thinking about that because that's what's going to fuel our success is growing and increasing revenues. And but we also have to think about the social aspect of the business. So that's why we're and environmental side. So there's three pillars of sustainability. There's economic, social, environmental. And we're building a business that's hitting on all three because that's what ASU taught me to do. So yeah, we're thinking about all three all the time, and I think over the next 5 to 10 years, since now sustainability is kind of being put in everybody's education, even in elementary schools now they're starting to do these programs, we're going to get rewarded for our business practices, so it'll end up being a responsible thing, but it'll also drive revenues and market shares and customer loyalty because we're doing the right things, you know, in all three areas.
So how did you get started with this idea? I mean, this is a very different, unique idea for this area.
I was watching a lot of, in my sustainability coursework, I focused on food. So I did all my research projects on food. And that really opened me up to the fact that agriculture is the number one issue. If we want to address climate change, agriculture emits 50% of all the greenhouse gas emissions, all the transportation in the world, trucks, fleet vehicles, commuter cars, 18% of all the greenhouse gas emissions. And then you got that whole food aspect that we live off of food. So agriculture's, and after going through sustainability coursework, in my opinion, agriculture is the number one issue, and the facts seem to point that out as well. So thinking about that, it's like, all right, you know, I want to make a difference in sustainability. Looks like agriculture is a huge opportunity to do something. And soil is going to kind of be the foundation for our future in sustainable, ecological, organic farming, local farming. Soil is going to be the foundation of it. So how do we, you know, make sure we're going to have enough farmland and so good soil to support that kind of future? Right, currently we're sending 40% of all the food to the landfill. So right away, that's a great place to start, is by not letting that stuff get to the landfill and recovering it and transforming it into a resource that we can use to make our city more resilient or regenerate farmland or build new farmland or supply aquaponics or greenhouse growing vertical gardening with compost that they're going to need to grow the crops in new urban environments.
What are some of the challenges that you've encountered as you're in your business?
Capital. So capital is definitely a huge challenge, raising capital. That's something that is very, very important. So capital has been a challenge. Besides capital, it's kind of just capital issues. So it's there. You got financial capital and you got human capital. Those are the two biggest challenges for a startup business that we've started, Recycled City. That's the two main challenges.
Tell me about the human capital challenges.
So without financial capital, it's difficult to get the human capital in. So this is a sort of thing that you know, we either have to raise financial capital or we have to find people that are very, very skilled, but they're also very passionate and knowledgeable about the sustainable local food system. So finding those people in all those circumstances, it's difficult.
Right, and having a volunteer, I'm guessing, is a challenge as well.
Right, so, yeah, so we don't have any volunteers. We're a for-profit business. So we have three co-owners of the business, and then we have a couple contract workers.
So, and you have to maintain, I mean, pick up all of the, explain to me what your business does now.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the details of that.
So we provide a residential and a commercial service. For the residential service, we drop off a 5-gallon pickle bucket with an airtight lid and a liner inside the bin. And then we give you a small lunch bag, like a paper lunch bag you'd send your kid to school with Bokashi. And Bokashi is a compost accelerant / odor preventer. And it's made out of spent grain that we get from local breweries. So this Bokashi already made beer. And now we're using it to prevent odor and accelerate the compost process. So we drop off the bin, the lid, the Bokashi, and then the resident, be it at a single family home, condominium, apartment, they'll add their food waste and paper towels and other compostable materials into the bin and set it outside on their service day. And then we come by and make an exchange. They get a sanitized bin every single week, new clean bin, new liner, another bag of the Bokashi, and the cycle kind of repeats itself week to week. And we bring all the compost to a local farm and then transform the materials actually into compost. And then the resident decides what happens to the compost. It's either going to go back to them for their gardening, or it's going to stay at the nonprofit local farm that we work with and be used to support them. They have 7 acres, a couple acres of orchard, and then a new 20-acre property in South Phoenix in a USDA food desert. And they have a bunch of missions on getting food into families that need it, and food accessibility, and social equity issues.
So let's talk a little bit about the farm that you're a partner with. Can you name the farm, and can you explain what those kind of what the vision or what this farm does and how it helps
mm-hmm.
with food justice?
Yep. So the farm is the Orchard Community Learning Center. It's in South Phoenix off of Baseline Road and 9th Avenue. And it was started by a man named John Wan, and he was a principal in the school district for 21 years at Valley View Elementary School. And he started the Orchard Community Learning Center a few years ago, less than 5 years ago. And what they do is they hold like camps and activities for kids, and they teach them science, technology, engineering, math, and agriculture. And then they also have a market where you can go and you can actually use your food stamps to purchase vegetables. So their mission, the Orchard Community Learning Center's mission, is to get food into the families that need it, make it accessible so they don't have income hurdles to access the healthy food, and then to teach the future generations about, you know, the systems that make this possible.
Why do you think it's important to teach the future generations about the food, I mean, good food and things that, the healthy food?
Because they're going to be the decision, these people are going to be the decision makers in the future. So impacting them at a young age is going to have a much higher probability of them making different lifestyle choices as they go forward.
And how does it feel for you to be part of this?
Feels great. You know, this is exactly what I want to be doing. I see a lot of interconnections with food and health and just circumstantial issues, so I think think we can really utilize a resource that we're sending to the landfill to kind of fuel, you know, this whole regeneration of agriculture and community.
And let's talk a little bit about this movement, the local organic movement that's happening in Phoenix. Kind of, can you tell me a little bit about it and how have you seen it change?
Yeah, so I started going to the Phoenix Public Farmers Market in 2006-2007. I don't know when it started, but when I noticed when that one started, over the last like 10 years, a lot of farmers markets have started around here. There's a lot more of them, so people are looking for it. And when I just go into like the big box retailers, even like Safeway, Fry's, Costco, there's a lot more organic, even locally sourced products at these stores. So I see a lot of momentum, and there's definitely been a lot of growth in it.
So do you see, how will this help, this movement help your business?
It's the key ingredient to the business. That's the demand that we're living off of, is the people that want to see a local, sustainable, organic food system. Without the growth in that industry, we want to have a business.
So, what is your hope that by 2040, how your business will change and evolve? What do you think that will look like?
So, we want to be managing waste for municipalities, businesses, and transforming it either through anaerobic digestion into energy and then into a compost product, or straight into farmland. When you start to do a lot of composting, it's sometimes difficult to find enough farmers to utilize all that compost for farming. So what we want to do is build a very, very large farming operation that we can use the compost for and then sell back to restaurants, wholesalers, institutional buyers, and kind of control and have a part in a lot of different parts of the food system. So kind of where, if you think of a circle, we want to be at the end of the cycle where the waste is used to go to the landfill, and we want to transform that into resources, be it via energy and compost, and then use the compost for farming and be able to sell that produce back into the compost collection market that we're building. The biggest hurdle in farming is not growing the stuff, it's distributing it and selling it. There's a ton of waste in just produce that isn't sold or purchased once it is bought by Safeway and then it gets to the shelf, it's not sold. And then a lot of smaller farmers that sell directly to consumer, they're going to have a lot of waste too. You know, they'll have an acre of lettuce in the field and they'll sell half acre because that's all the farmers market purchased. So by building a compost collection list of customers, that's our customer list for selling the produce. So we envision, and we just launched the residential version of this. When we pick up your compost bucket at your house, we're going to drop off a box of vegetables, fruits, herbs, and flowers from the Orchard Community Learning Center, where the compost is used to grow that stuff. So that's the start of that full circle and what I'm talking about. And by 2040, so that'd be in 25 years, you know, we think we want to scale that up, go into other markets, and really be a major player nationally, if not internationally, in creating these circular systems in food.
What is the role of education in teaching people how to do this, or how to be open to your idea? Mm-hmm. How do you convince people to?
Well, if everybody could go through the sustainability program that I went through, I think that would do it.
And if they can't, how do you make them open their eyes to what's happening in the community itself?
Well, I think it's through direct engagement, either social media or distributing information, either on our even our website or in physical form, that they can read on their own time and start to educate themselves, and we can provide the resources for them to self-educate. I think that's very, very important, and it's going to be a key to our success is helping is educating people on what the importance and why we're doing what we're doing.
And why would you tell them you're doing what you're doing? What would you tell them?
Because it's the most important. So I would say that, what was the question?
That's okay. If you had a potential customer sitting here, if I'm a potential customer, how would you convince me that I should participate? I should hire you to
Okay.
and have one of your bins come
Do
into my
you
residence.
want there to be a local organic food system, or do you want agriculture to get more genetically and chemically driven? And if you want it to be more local and organic, then you need to start recycling all your food waste, and not just into compost, but into farmland. So then we can have that local farmland to sustain local populations, and we're not trucking or transporting food from far distances. And there's a ton of different negative consequences to that, be it, nutrition goes down in the food, there's a lot more fossil fuels and pollution. So by building local farmland, you're going to give the dream that you want to see a chance. Whereas if you just keep throwing this into the garbage, the person next door is going to keep doing that too. You got to be that local activist if you want to see that
Well, okay,
happen.
you have convinced me. Can you explain to me why, kind of the full circle and your role in this full circle? You've mentioned kind of a full circle. Can you tell me a little bit about your role in that and how that's important to this food sustainability?
Could you ask the question one more time?
Sure. And it's probably not, I'm not phrasing it correctly. So you have a part in this full circle of food sustainability. Can you explain your role in that?
Our role in the full circle is right at the end of recovering the compostable materials before it goes to the landfill, and then transforming that into new soil and fertilizer, compost, and then using that compost product in farming, and then selling the produce either to wholesalers, institutional buyers, direct to consumer, direct to business. And then so that's where we see ourselves fitting in. So that's a huge part of the circle. So we want to be involved in a big part of it.
So, and how did you decide to go to the residential sector? What?
First, so we did residential first because we were bootstrapping it, and to pick up commercial waste is a lot more capital intensive. You need a bigger truck, you need bigger land, you need more equipment, more water. Just the resource demands are a lot higher. So I started it by doing it for free for like 10 people, and I did it for a couple months. And I just started doing that because I saw that businesses in other metropolitan cities had started. I think the first one was in 2010 in over on the East Coast. And so I started doing it for free, and I was like, all right, I think this is gonna work. So we started charging our customers, our residential customers, and we built a website and social media page, and filed the licensing with the Arizona Corporation Commission, and kind of just started going for it, and doing farmers markets, signing people up. And we offer a 14-day free trial, so it's no risk for anybody to sign up. You can just sign up for the 14-day free trial. We drop a bin off, and we make two pickups, and then you decide if you want to, if this is something you want to do. So it's really easy for somebody to at least give it a try.
What's the reaction from some of your long-term customers that they're making this difference?
Everybody's super excited about what they're doing, and it's really rewarding to see, you know, other people just coming together and kind of seeing the same vision and then getting more people involved. For the first, I'd say, like, year, I'd say our customers were a little hesitant to start referring other people, so our referral side of the business was really, really low. But over the last few months, I've seen a big change in that, and we're getting a lot of, because we have our free trial page on our website, and there's a referred by section, and now I'm seeing a lot more, you know, Jenna or, you know, names of our customers. So they're getting more confidence in our business. And the big thing that we got to do is the education part. There is we have to further educate our customers on how to speak about this, because that's really what's going to start driving, is turning all of our compost customers into sales people, because we're all in this together. You know, this is a very good thing to be working towards. So our customers believe in what we're doing. So now we just got to educate them on how to do it. At first, I don't think they really knew how. Like I said, you probably would have had to go to the School of Sustainability to sell this thing. But now, after 6 months to a year of watching our Facebook posts and maybe meeting me at a farmer's market or something like that, people are getting it and learning how to talk about it.
Why do you think that interaction is so important with your customers, that one-on-one and that level of trust? I hear trust is a big key in this, or in the organic movement.
Yep, trust is a huge thing. And it's really important for our customers to meet us in person, because from my feedback, they really see how genuine that we are about this and how much passion we have for this. So that, you know, gives them a lot more incentive to support it.
Are they surprised by the amount of waste that they have, just the one family themselves?
Some are.
Okay.
I think a lot of people have sort of had their head around it, because we eat food every single day, and you know, we're always cutting watermelons up or making a tomato pasta, and every single day all of us, you know, have that experience of throwing the food into the garbage. And a lot of people I know I felt like this before I even started doing composting. You know, when you throw it into the trash, you're like, you know, like, it doesn't make sense, but I don't know what else to do.
So. That's very true for all of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so talk to me a little bit about the composting and how long it takes, kind of how long that procedure takes.
It takes 4 to 6 months. The way we do it, so we do hot composting in windrows, active windrows, so we turn them twice a week, we water them, they get up to over 130 degrees for 15 days, turn it 5 times, and then we soil analysis it and food safety test it.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about do you have any concerns over the industry's power within the food system?
Yeah, I have concerns. My biggest concern, I would say, like, at the top of the food system, my biggest concern for the top of the food system is, like, the organic certification board at a national level. And that's kind of works the same as our political system, where money wins. So I have a lot of concerns about that. And about the what would you say, the quality of organic food or the ethicalness, or I don't think I'm thinking of the right word, but basically what I'm saying is it really organic? It has that USDA organic label on it, but what pesticides, what chemicals are being approved for organic production? And that's decided by this board, at the USDA Organic Certification Board. And, you know, just like everything else, certain people are going to get into those positions through the same means as politics really works, in the way I see it. So that's a huge concern, but it's a huge opportunity too, because we can Recycled City can use that as an educating tool for the customers. So we're not tied to USDA organic certification in any single way. So by educating our customers on the difference between organic produce and then produce that we grow, we could, you know, use that, you know, concern in our favor, and by, you know, educating the customer about, hey, you know, there's still pesticides in organic production, you know, there's still monocrops, you know, we're still destroying a lot of soil.
I hear the threat of soil being the kind of the foundation. Mm-hmm. That's the important factor, is what I keep hearing from you.
Mm-hmm.
How do you teach people that? Because I always think about the food, but they never think about the soil. I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. How do you educate people about the importance of soil?
So I think you got to talk about how the plants that you eat grow, and what fuels their growth, and that's the interconnections that are happening in the soil. Plants feed themselves through the sun and the soil and water. So if you have a weak part of those ingredients, like you take the sun out, not gonna have, you know, you take water out, it's not gonna work. You take soil out, you're going to need a lot of genetics and chemicals. So having healthy, biologically active soil is going to be the key factor in whether we have a successful local organic food system.
So let's talk about the food system itself. What is the current food system impact on the environment as you see it?
Well, the current agricultural system produces over 50% of the greenhouse gas emissions. So it's the largest industry emitter of greenhouse gases. So what was the question again?
That's okay. How do you see the impact on the environment from the current food systems?
The current impact on the environment?
Mm-hmm.
So they're eroding soil, and they're emitting a lot of greenhouse gases. And then we're also taking valuable ecosystems out of play, like rainforests, and turning it into soybeans, corn, and cattle grazing. And those ecosystem services are extremely valuable. So the current agricultural system is definitely having a negative impact. You can just kind of just keep going down the list. There's over 400 dead zones globally. Dead zones are where rivers go into the ocean, and rivers carry a lot of runoff from agricultural fields, and that runoff contains phosphorus, nitrogen, pesticides, and once it hits the ocean, comes down the creeks, into the rivers, out into the oceans, it sucks all the oxygen out of it, and big algae blooms, and it kills all the marine life in the oceans. And there's just a bunch of examples, negative examples like that agriculture is kind of driving. So there's a huge opportunity to really reimagine how we do agriculture.
And what do you think policy-wise needs to be in place in order to reimagine how to do agriculture? What changes need to be made?
At the top, with the Farm Bill, we can. There's a lot of incentives for growing food for animals, so that would be one place to start. They use all the water. There's a really tough drought on the West Coast right now. A lot of that water is used to grow alfalfa and food for animals. And that's all incentivized from the top. So that could definitely change. And then at a more local level, municipalities can start to open up land that is just sitting fallow, maybe fallow for 20 years, like the new 20-acre property the orchard's moving on to. It's just been a vacant property for 20 years. So municipalities can play a part in developing policy to encourage composting, encourage local farming.
So let's talk kind of your final thoughts on, I asked you about where you'd want the business to be in 2040. Where would you want kind of the whole local organic movement to be by 2040?
Totally different than it is now.
Tell me how.
It's going to be less dark. And what I mean by that is, me as a consumer, when I go to, let's say, Whole Foods and I want to buy an organic apple, I still really don't know what organic is. I mean, I might know the big three in organics, like you can't irradiate the food, you can't use sewage sludge to grow it, and it can't be a genetically modified organism. But beyond that, I don't know what pesticides were used. I don't know, you know, how the soil was taken care of. So in 2040, I would like to see a system where the consumer understands much more. There's a lot more light to what organic really is and what local food really is, and especially what natural food is, because anything can be a natural food product.
Can you explain to me what constitutes an organic food?
Yeah. So the USDA organic certification has three, they call it the big three, and it's no genetically engineered organisms, can't be grown with sewage sludge, and then it cannot be irradiated before it gets to market. So besides those big threes, it gets into kind of like rules and regs. More details, like they have a list of approved chemicals for organic, and that is decided by that organic certification board. So unless if you're going to do a lot of research and make a lot of phone calls, and most moms and dads are probably not going to do that.
Probably busy. Is there a difference between certified organic and organic?
Yeah. There is. So certified organic is through the USDA, and then they have, it's like 100% certified organic, and then they have like it'll either say 100% certified organic, and then if it just says organic, that means 95%, and I don't know what that other 5% can be, honestly. And then organic just means over 70%. So you got organic, that means over 70% of the product is organic. And then certified organic is 95%. And then if it says 100% certified organic, that means 100%.
Do you think the local consumers know the difference?
No. I learned all this in sustainability coursework. So absolutely not.
And especially at farmers market, is there any regulation at farmers markets that happen?
I think it's self-regulation, more so at farmers markets.
So do you have any final closing thoughts on kind of the whole food system in Arizona itself?
We're probably gonna have to use less water to do what we're doing, and we can save a lot of water by transitioning from animal agriculture into you call it human agriculture, you know, growing for humans.
Do you think that's going to be easy to do?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a combination of, you know, natural forces, environmental forces, policy. I think a lot of people in very powerful positions understand what's going on, and they know that we need to do something about this to, you know, kind of sustain our planet for future generations. So I think there's going to be a lot of policy things coming in. You know, the world economic system, I think, is going to go through a huge change over the next 10 years with globalization and currencies and so right now ecosystem services are not really valued. I think the whole idea of like natural capitalism is going to be a huge part of our new economic system. And so we're going to have a lot of things coming together that are really going to propel this. I'd say the only thing that could get in the way of it is just money and greed from a very, very small amount of people. So I don't see that as a huge thing. I think, like, in the end, I don't think that's going to be a big deal. I think there are so many people where I don't think just a few people are going to be able to stop it.
Okay. Any final closing thoughts? Anything I missed or that I didn't ask or didn't bring up?
I don't think so.
So tell me one last question. As an ASU graduate of the sustainability program, why would you recommend more people need to go through that program itself?
I think it really puts you in touch with what's happening on our planet right now. And without that kind of education, you may not know or care or just be conscious of it, you know, kind of think about it in your daily life. Because I think there's a whole thing in sustainability education where it's like lifestyles or technology. Really, what's going to save us? And I think it's all lifestyle. We can use technology in any way we want, good for bad, you know. But it's really the lifestyle choices that people make that are, it's going to make the big difference.
How did it make a difference in your life?
My lifestyle choices changed throughout college, and that has had a very positive impact on my health and my energy levels and my ability to think clearly. So, and then I've really lowered my ecological footprint by being conscious of these things. So that's, you know, I'm setting a good example, and I've definitely had good influences on my parents and my brother and people close around me, and then hopefully, you know, they also, it just kind of keeps waving out and making bigger impacts on more people.
That's kind of exciting.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.